Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington, catching up with Austin Wintry. And, you know, ever since you shared just that little bit of your music for Deformers at MAGFest in January, I have been so looking forward to talking with you about it. So here we are, and it's fantastic to catch up.
Well, I'm very happy I was able to give you that little sort of backstage preview. The soundtrack album in particular had a long, winding road still ahead of it. At that point, so you really got kind of a ground floor look. In fact, I can't even remember what state it was in when I played it for you. But in any case, I'm glad that you liked what you heard, and you know you'll still like return my calls and things like that, because it is, I think, the weirdest thing I've ever sort of conjured up, and so anybody that's still willing to talk to me after listening to it, I consider that a victory.
Well, I have to say, everybody that I've played it for, they just start smiling right away, because it's just such a cool mashup of all these, you know, the kind of iconic music from the spaghetti westerns with Morricone, and then wacky circus stuff, and it's such a interesting combination of instruments too. So, you know, maybe for openers, you could tell me a little bit about what you were thinking when Radio at Dawn pitched you this project.
It has an interesting road, because I worked with them a little bit on The Order 1886 and became friends with, you know, that team through that project. And their CTO, their chief technology officer, and one of the co-founders of Ready at Dawn is a guy named Andrea Pacino. And he and I really connected, because he's just this music lover on a level that you can't imagine. I mean, you know, he's a conservatory trained pianist as a kid, despite the fact that he, you know, now has this incredibly technical game industry career. I mean, he built their engine. I mean, you know, it's not like he's, you know, programming in tools. I mean, this is really high level programming we're talking about. And yet he came from this background of just a profound love of music. And he's the kind of guy that, you know, you start talking about Verdi and he'll get tears in his eyes. I mean, it's just, but the funny thing, you know, he's Italian, Andrea Pacino is his name, and thick, you know, beautiful Italian accent. And on top of that, he's also a bodybuilder, a for real, no joke, literally looks like, you know, Stallone in the 70s bodybuilder. And so he's just this bizarre anomaly of a human being, and just profoundly wonderful and sharp and funny and passionate guy. And so while working on The Order, I think just kind of as a stress release, he started building a tech demo at night for fun. And it was just kind of like a physics simulation, and he had seen a short film from like early 90s or late 80s. It was a German short film.
I watched that. It's creepy. It's called Balance.
And that he had remembered that, and he'd always wanted to make a game using that mechanic of this sort of tilting platform where everybody's sort of weight, like everyone's relative weight to each other, is factoring into, you know, how much you can move and all that sort of thing. And so he just started toying around with just a physics simulation that kind of inspired by that film. And he just started telling me about it. You know, we would have dinner and he'd said, oh, I started working on this thing, and, you know, maybe we can do it as a side project together, just you and I, literally just like the two of us as the sole team. And, you know, or an additional artist or something like that. But you know, just like on the side of other things going on at Ready at Dawn. And then it was just like, as he built it and as he worked on it, people would play it and be like, this is immediately fun. Like, this is not a game that you need to warm up to. It just immediately feels right in your hands. And so it's like he started to show it to more people, and then eventually shows it to, you know, Rue and some of the other, you know, management and owners and whatnot of Ready at Dawn. And it, over time, it became this should be like Ready at Dawn's next actual game. And so it just started to get bigger and bigger and bigger in scope. Until before we knew it, you know, our little pet project, you know, years later, you know, I'm like in London recording the score for it, and it was always going to be just this kind of homebrew thing for us to have fun with, because he and I just click so much. And through that, through all of that, he was just adamant about, I want, he said, I don't want to tell you what to do. I don't want to offer you any real creative direction. And there's not going to be any narrative. He said, I want to make a game that's fun to play. I don't want to, they went so far down the rabbit hole with obsessing over narrative on The Order that he probably somewhat in response to that, he just thought, I just want to make something that just reminds me of classic, like, Tetris or Smash Brothers or games that are just purely about a game mechanic and are just fun to play. And so he said, bearing in mind that there's no narrative, you can do anything you want. I want it to feel epic but whimsical. That was his little three-word thing. And he said, an epic, he doesn't mean like trailer aesthetic, Hans Zimmer kind of epic. He just said, I want it to feel exciting, essentially, but it shouldn't be overly dramatic in tone. Like, I don't want people to think that we take ourselves too seriously. And that was before even the like art direction and all that migrated in the way where it's now it's like this squishy Pixar thing. That even predating the real look of it, that was his thinking. I just don't want it to be too serious. I don't want it to feel like you could swap this music into, Uncharted and it would work fine. Like, it should clearly have a wink and a nod quality, but how you get there, that's on you. And so at some point, I was just looking at concept art and seeing these kind of cracked stone, and I just thought, it'd be kind of funny is if I score it like it's this Western, like, and I said, I don't have much of this intellectual reasoning behind that. It just sort of, the combination seems fun, and I want to see if I can kind of infuse that with steroids a bit, and just see where it goes. And he, as with everything else that I said, probably against better judgment, he would just say, "Great, go with it." And so yeah, it just was like this unleashed. Just keep having fun. Keep having fun.
Well, that's like the fundamental thing of it because it is fun. And what I love about it is, well, first of all, the wacky instrumentation is just really way out there. And you've said that maybe the thing that really sparked you was this discovering this incredible accordion virtuoso.
Yeah, her name is Ksenia Sidorova,
Yeah.
She's Latvian, and she just recently moved to Spain, but she was living in London at the time. And she's a full-fledged classical artist. You know, she has an exclusive Deutsche Grammophon recording contract, and she tours all over the world playing, accordion with orchestra repertoire, primarily a project of her own, which was a she just put out an album a little while, like last year, I think, that is accordion with orchestra adaptations of Carmen. And so that's a big thing that she tours around playing now, Carmen as an accordion showpiece. And the funny thing is, it's Andrea who discovered her. Andrea and I trade, YouTube links and things almost every day. He'll even if he's so stressed and so, like working around the clock, 24-hour days, day after day after day after day, he'll still find time to go listen to new music on YouTube, or like look up performances or whatever. And so I'll get an email, and he's also good friends with Jason Graves, so it's often the three of us in an email, and where it'll be like, okay, here are three YouTube links to three different performances of the second movement of Mahler 4. Here's my favorite, but what do you guys think? Like, it's that it's very nerdy and glorious. And so he one time sends me an email, and he says, I've always hated the accordion, but now I love the accordion. And then there's like a link to Ksenia playing. And he knows that I have an accordion and I play it like an amateur. And like I record my accordion for like the Banner Saga and things like that, but I'm not a real accordion player. And so, but I'm familiar with the instrument more than most others because I do own one and I do play it a bit. And so he would tease me, like he doesn't particularly love that instrument. It just doesn't, there's just a few kind of blind spots that he has where he just says, I'm just not a fan. But then he sees her elevating the musicianship of it beyond anything he'd ever really seen before. It sort of like reminds me of like the story of when Leonard Bernstein's father would discourage him or was skeptical of him becoming a professional musician. And the reason why is because he came from this sort of Eastern European Jewish background where a musician meant the guy at the wedding whose hat is overturned, and you're supposed to throw a coin into his hat as he plays at the party at the wedding. Like that, to him, the idea of a musician as a serious artist was a total blind spot for him, and he couldn't fathom what his son was talking about. And it's almost like that, I think, with Andrea initially in the accordion. It was just like, well, it's like a folk instrument. It's beautiful, but it's not like, Yo-Yo Ma kind of territory or something like that. And then she completely changed his mind on that. And so he would just send me these excited emails of like, look at this, like, have you ever heard anyone? Did you even know it's physically possible to play the accordion this way and all that sort of stuff? So I just thought, it'd be funny, just as a surprise to him. What if I just hired her? And so I literally go on her website and I like look up her manager's phone number, and I just cold called and said, I'm writing this game score, and I really want to feature Ksenia as the sort of star soloist. And here's examples of me doing that in the past. And I like sent them Journey, and I said, that to me, it's not just that I want her to be like a session musician, because I didn't want them to think like I'm just looking for an accordion player and she'll do fine. Like, I wanted to show them the way that I put, Tina, for example, Tina Guo, in the front and center of how Journey is positioned, because to me, the soloist carries it. They're the soul of it. Or like Kristen Nagus as the oboe soloist on Abzu, where they are at the spiritual core of that writing. And I said that is what I intend for Ksenia. This is a solo vehicle for her in my mind, and would she be interested? And she immediately wrote back and said, oh, this sounds so cool. I'm not, she said, I'm not much of a gamer, although weirdly, she was very excited to discover I had worked on Counter-Strike, which was a big surprise. That of all the things that she could have sort of spotted on my website, that's what really, she was like, oh, I love Counter-Strike. Remember that saying, like, really? I just, of all the things, that was such an unexpected, but she'd never worked in games or anything like that, and just said, sign me up, I'm in. And she was an absolute dream to work with, not to mention just a ferocious talent. I mean, I wrote hard shit and she just chewed it up. I mean, she absolutely, and with a smile and always laughing. I mean, we had such giggly recording sessions at Air. I could go on and on and on, but it was just such a joy. And it also made me realize, like, I've barely scratched the surface on what accordion can really do. I mean, she made me realize that as much as I felt like I understood that instrument, I really didn't understand that instrument, which was exciting.
Yeah, well, what were some of the things that you guys did that did change your mind about what the accordion could do?
Well, you know, she has this beautiful custom-made for her accordion that has an enormous amount of sort of reed combination and register changes that it can make through all these buttons, which, you know, mine can do. Mine has like 2 or 3 options. Hers has like 30. Hmm. And so there would be moments, for example, where I would have this really quick line written where she's supposed to go, you know, or some like little flourish kind of thing. And she would say, what if I split this between the right and the left hand, and I shifted the left hand up an octave into like the piccolo register, and then I made it, this, and she had all these specific terms for like the reed combination, which dramatically alters the color, and, you know, single reed, double reed, all that kind of thing, where you can really, I mean, it sounds like a different instrument completely. And she would just make these quick adjustments and then, you know, divide the line between her right and left hand. And it would just suddenly change character enormously. But it was like she discovered its real character, because she would say, oh, you know, I think it'd be interesting if, you know, like there was one part where I had written out these rapid parallel thirds. And I said, you know, I said, I know a pianist could do this, although I'm right at the high end of the tempo where this would be physically possible. And you'd have to be like, I couldn't do it as a pianist to save my life. But it is doable by a proper virtuoso. And she said, oh, no, this will be easy. And and she just split it between her left and her right hand, playing a third apart, and then was shifting things up and down an octave just to experiment. And it was like, it was like looking in a kaleidoscope where just suddenly there was just this barrage of evolving colors. There was another moment as well where I had written in these measured tremolos, thinking, I don't know if it's possible, so I'm gonna go into it with a backup plan, where she's just literally rearticulating really fast these chords, where it's just, you know, tucka 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 tucka. And I said, now this might not be possible, because you have to very fast, you know, you're moving the whole accordion open and closed with your arms. I mean, it takes a lot of physical precision and just strength. And I said, I don't know if this is even possible. And she just laughed and said, are you kidding? We could do much more than this. And then just would proceed to, you know, say, what if I played this line that way? And so a line that was this, you know, ba 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 ba, she started going like a triple tonguing trumpet player. And I just, things like that, where I just said, God, I really underestimated the physical limitations of this instrument. And because it just seems so cumbersome and bulky for that kind of light on its feet stuff, and it just really exposed how ignorant I truly was. She was a monster.
Well, the video that you have of her, that recording session, is just, it's magical because it's real obvious that you guys have this synergy just going on right there. And it must have been a really amazing session with all these ideas getting thrown back and forth.
It was great fun. And, you know, to record at a studio like Air Lyndhurst is always a, great joy. We did Abzu there as well. And it is a really spectacular studio. I think she probably has that kind of synergy with everyone she works with because she's just so, I mean, it's probably the, the core to her success, I think. She's just, I mean, she's such a phenomenal musician, but she's also just so charming and so sweet and so such a team player. You know, there's this reputation amongst the kind of elite classical musicians that there's a very kind of diva, holier than thou arrogance and elitism and all that kind of thing. You know, especially among the classic, like violinists and cellists and, the people that if you want to write for them, they immediately are skeptical because they're like, you realize you're going up against hundreds of years of the greatest repertoire ever written, in competition for my time. And accordion has no such thing. It's like writing for saxophone players, and what all their music is new. So they're like, put on a helmet and let's go. And she had that attitude fully. I mean, she just was so open to everything and so excited to try anything, and had all the stereotypical pretentiousness that you occasionally find in classical musicians was nowhere to be found with her.
Wow, that is just so amazing. And it actually it reminds me of a thing that I wanted to talk with you about, because you recorded this soundtrack in a bunch of different places, in London and Macedonia, and then had some of the artists like Kristen just send you the sound files. And so as you're assembling all of this, what are the conversations like with the musicians so that the end product sounds like everyone was in the same room at the same time?
Well, obviously, it just requires that I be that I know that I have a relatively clear vision of what it's supposed to be. And obviously, my parts are always written out. I never have improvised parts except in extremely rare situations, and there wasn't any on this score. So I'm going into it with a certain knowledge of what the goal is, and that makes it actually not that difficult. It's not a lot of mysticism to it because you get people emotionally in the right place, and you try to make sure that, like for example, Ksenia, a lot of her sections, we did this kind of brass band in London, where I wrote for it. It's not really meant to feel like an orchestral brass section as much as it is meant to be like a brass band, like almost like a, Charles Ives Town Square playing in the gazebo kind of group, where the part writing for them is holistic and not accompanimental to the rest of the missing orchestra kind of idea. But like when she was tracking, she had only the mock-ups of that in her headphones, because we did the brass after her. And so I had to, make sure that, the mock-ups were a reasonable indication. They're obviously not remotely the same thing, but they gave a sense of the vibe. And then also just, walking her through it and saying like, let's just talk in emotional terms as if I'm a director on set and you're the actor, and we tap into kind of emotional ideas or even like character ideas, and just kind of roll with that. And also, simple things of just showing a few seconds of the gameplay of like hamburgers smashing into balls of sushi and saying like, I think you'd probably only need to see about 10 seconds of that to calibrate accordingly. And that was always consistently the case.
Thank you.
So yeah, I was a bit scattered. Actually, probably the most so of anything that I've ever done, because we had her and then this brass group in London, and then because of the protracted schedule, I recorded all of that in October, but all the kind of circus stuff, which used the strings, I hadn't even written that yet, and so I had to have a totally separate, sovereign solution to that. So I just decided to write it for my friends in Macedonia, with whom I've worked many times. They're the orchestra that recorded Journey, and I worked on a game called Sunset that features them, and I've done a handful of movies with them, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. They are phenomenal to work with, and we have, like a 6 or 7 year history together now. So I wrote the kind of circus, weird waltz string orchestra music for them, and recorded that months later in December. So that became its own sovereign entity, and then sprinkled throughout, yeah, was Kristen playing primarily tenor recorder and penny whistle. And then I needed a whistler, for the sort of spaghetti Western homage. And I actually, that one, I didn't know a great whistler, so I just wrote on Facebook, like, who knows a great whistler? And I got a bunch of like demo reels, basically, and I auditioned a few folks and chose one that seemed to fit the bill, and he nailed it. And ironically, he lived like 10 minutes from my studio, so he was a local by total coincidence. And then there's these other two just outrageous virtuoso soloists that I feature almost as much as Ksenia, which are the classical guitarist Scott Tennant, and then Sandy Cameron, with whom I had worked on Assassin's Creed, the violinist, both of whom also live in LA. The writing, I think it was probably the hardest writing I've ever done for either of those two instruments also. I mean, Assassin's Creed definitely has some crazy challenging stuff in it for violin, but I was surprised, actually. It was harder than I thought it was going to be, watching them work through these crazy kind of flamenco dances. But these are some of the best musicians alive. I mean, Scott Tennant's a Grammy-winning, co-founder of the LA Guitar Quartet, and in the classical guitar circles, easily considered top 5 or 10 in the world. And also, he and I have worked together for years, and although I think this was the first game that we had done together, I've only done movies with him in the past. But again, just such friendly people, so eager to just get it right and to do whatever it takes and to find solutions. And guitar especially, is so challenging to write for, because you write a figure and it just seems so easy, and they say, oh, this is not playable physically, like no human could do this. But if I change 1/16th note in beat 3, now it's easy. And I'm like, okay, that just makes no sense to me at all. But that's just a typical guitar. The fingerings are, especially because it's tuned in fourths with this third in the middle randomly. To me, there's something very unintuitive about how they lay under the finger. Whereas, even though I'm not a violinist or a cellist, I can kind of physically figure it out. I can look at the neck of a violin, and I can know how they're going to finger it most likely, and write accordingly. But guitar is just a mystery to me forever, especially classical guitar, where they really get anal about the fingerings. And so anyway, yeah, these musicians are just, they're from all over the map, and all brought such incredible energy. I'd be remiss to not name the rest of them. Ross Guerin is a harmonica player who I've worked with a lot, and he's one of these guys that plays the full range of various diatonic and then chromatic harmonica and bass harmonica. And he's also a composer, and I love working with him. He brings so much energy and great and just sass. Like, I tell him, I want some personality in this, especially because the harmonica really shows up a lot in the waltz, the weird circus stuff, which is trying to kind of always make sure the spaghetti Western DNA is present, no matter if we're talking about the waltz, the circus music, or the sort of flamenco-ish material. Like, I never want to be too far from the Western, and so the harmonica was one of the ways that I kind of grounded that. And he's just so great.
Thank you.
And then the last, there's a singer, Holly Sadios, who had also sang on Assassin's Creed. I always wanted to write like full on coloratura, you know, angular, arpeggiated sort of burly stuff for her because she can handle it. And I've heard her sing that sort of stuff many times.
The impression that I get listening to her in the middle of those waltzes is, you know, the one last standing soprano in an opera production that's just going to hell and like the scenery is falling. And darn it, she's going to get through this aria no matter what.
Yeah. Punished her many times over the years with just these brutally challenging parts, but not from a coloratura standpoint. Usually they're expressively challenging, but she's up for it, and she's a real close friend and always eager for, you know, doing more craziness. And so I said, you know, I'm just going to write. I said, it's a rare example of an actual vocalese. I usually am kind of averse to vocalese because I just seems lazy not to set a text, and text is inspiring. It changes the way you write the line. You know, I'm not a big fan of just the endlessly oohing and aahing ethereal choral stuff that's just so prevalent. It always feels like it's a missed opportunity to kind of add something more textured and interesting. And then the way the language changes the actual sound of the voice to me is half of what singing is. You know, hearing someone singing a Schubert Lieder in German versus like a Ravel song in French versus, you know, Glitter and Be Gay by Leonard Bernstein, you know, the language really alters the color dramatically. And I love that about vocal writing. And so this was a rare example where I said, actually, I really just want to treat you like a, you know, like a musical saw or a theremin or something. And she was great. And then the kind of Swiss Army knife behind all of that, and a musician that I work with probably more than any other, is a guy named Tom Straley, who plays like 200 instruments, all kind of in the guitar family. And so, you know, I've recorded him playing, you know, straight up rock power chords, electric guitar stuff or electric bass, you know, banjo, dobro, mandolin. And he plays all of that in this score, by the way. And at one point, there's this cue that has this odd, bouncing, weird rhythmic quality to it. And I said, I want this on banjo and electric guitar in unison. And I want the electric guitar to be totally without, you know, reverb. But let's try to find a kind of a fuzzy, muffled, you know, EQ'd, high-pass kind of sound to it. And Tom just goes, you know what would be interesting? Let's add a third layer to that identical part, but just doubling on electric sitar. And I said, yeah, okay, I'm open to it. And he did it. And I immediately was like, oh my God, that's the greatest sound I've ever heard in my entire life. He's just that guy. He's always got, you know, dulcimer or mandocello and all these similar kind of variations on these things. He plays them all, and he plays them spectacularly. And he's on virtually everything that I write somewhere, especially mandolin. I love mandolin so much as an instrument, and he plays it really nicely. And so, yeah, that's the kind of weird army of musicians that I feel so insanely lucky to be able to work with on these kinds of things.
Oh, yeah. And they just it does. It sounds like a merry band. It's like this company of actors that are like
right.
powering through this. And you brought them all together. You sort of corralled them all in your soundtrack, which isn't like any other game soundtrack I've ever experienced, because you had to make up, or you chose to make up little stories about these weird little blobs, the hamburger and the cow that bounces around and the cat and stuff. And it's just, it's brilliant. I mean, the writing is brilliant. And
that's overly kind. That whole thing, you know, I've always wanted to do kind of a Peter and the Wolf style, you know, narrator with orchestra or something like that. And because I love, to me, at the end of the day, music is storytelling. The reason why I love film scoring and video game scoring and, you know, television and all the rest of it, is because at the heart of it all, is I really just love storytelling. And I love hearing people tell stories. I enjoy telling stories. To me, the art of narrative is the thing I'm most drawn to of all. Poets and novelists and playwrights, and it's to me, the way in which we tell stories is a way to kind of shed light on the world. It's this beautiful other half of the coin to the interrogation of nature through science. To me, they are all, you know, science is essentially learning storytelling, you know, in a reverse engineered sort of way, and then the art is essentially creating storytelling. So with Deformers, there being no actual narrative, but having these characters that just seem to, you know, evoke backstories and weird adventures. I'm amazed that they were okay with this, because I'm essentially I'm like creating canon to their IP. and I didn't like ask for permission or have to like get anything approved from their internal. I just went and did it. And they seemed to enjoy it. Andrea thought the stories were funny, because I thought, you know, almost like a Dr. Seuss, you know, very kind of heavy with puns and very alliterative and rhyming and just for the sake of being silly, as like a quasi, like a Dr. Seuss meets Peter and the Wolf kind of idea. And so I called a friend of mine, this unbelievably talented voice actor, Troy Baker, who, you know, everybody knows him as Joel from The Last of Us, or Booker DeWitt from Bioshock Infinite. And, you know, he's played the Joker in I think it was Lego Batman, endless others, incredible talent. And I said, what do you think of narrating this soundtrack? And he was like, I'm in. Whatever. I don't know what the hell you're talking about, but let's do it. And so my dumb luck that he's just so blindly willing to dive into the unknown. And he said, what do you want for direction? And I said, imagine it's David Attenborough reading a Dr. Seuss book. And I said, but give it, you know, invent your own version of that. Don't let me tell you what to do. I figure if Andrea didn't make me have to respond to his direction, I shouldn't make Troy respond to my direction. So I just wrote out these little things and sent them to him. And I was traveling at the time. So he just recorded it in his home studio and just sent me an MP3 that I listened to on my phone in the car and was like, oh my God, this is incredible. I was just cackling with laughter.
It is not definitively known how the cheese-free ground chuck form named Patty came into the world, because everyone seems to have their own version of the story. For sure a descendant of Hamilton, Paddy's seedy tale is filled with smoked heroism, crisp romance, sliced intrigue, and is told in near-infinite variations throughout the lands. But regardless of his mysterious multiplicity, he is feared for his deceptive simplicity and penchant for surprises.
And so then, yeah, mastered the album, threw it all in there, and put out this... You know, and the music is so heavily re-edited from the original in-game assets, because the music has to work in such a specific way that's so geared around these 2-minute and 3-minute individual matches, mm-hmm. that to craft a soundtrack album that was more interesting than that was, you know, took months and months and months of work, and then figuring out how to marry that all to the narration. It actually was a huge stressful headache. Just to get it right, because I hated it. I just kept hating it. Every time I listened to it, I thought, this is not listenable. This is garbage. I really passionately hate this. And part of how I tried to unhate it was the narration. Was like, if I just listened to a bunch of random silliness, it just somehow didn't work for me. But I thought, if I plant the seed that I'm actually telling a story about, like, a hamburger, you know, that's descendant from a pig.
Oh, well, that's one of my favorite ones, actually, because the way that you set it up with his seedy tail with smoked heroism and
ridiculous puns. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my favorite is Sue, the sushi.
Oh, right.
because I just love the fact that the salmon and the ball of rice have separate eyes, but it's not necessarily two characters that are in this like eternal symbiosis. It's left unclear, and that just cracks me up. And so, yeah, I just thought, you know, if I tell you a few words, and then I play this music for you, you will hear it differently. You will think that that story existed, then I wrote the music.
Well, yeah, and
And
then
that's
there's
an intriguing concept to me.
no, it's neat because with the little setups, especially like with Ferguson the cat, then when I'm as I'm listening to it, I can hear like this little bit of meowing in the strings that is really kind of neat that she would maybe do.
Yeah, and see, that's all power of suggestion, because
Yep.
all of this was literally after the fact. Of how I decided which characters to feature and how was that the last part of the equation was that I commissioned our dear mutual friend Ángela Bermúdez in a succession of paintings describing all of this. The results of which will be a video I put on YouTube where I take the entire album and then with each track there are several paintings that kind of depict what you hear narrated. And like as still paintings, almost, I guess, in a way, it's like, you know, pictures at an exhibition. Except in this case, it's instead of like, you know, the gates of Kiev or whatever, it's a hamburger wearing sunglasses. So part of how I even crafted the narrative was just imagining what I wanted her to paint and just giggling at the image of her, you know, drawing like Ferguson, you know, and noodles and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And so, and she did, as you know, expected, an unbelievable job. It ended up being an enormous commission because it was like almost 25 paintings.
Wow.
Because each one, you know, each track of the album is several paintings that I'll kind of crossfade. It was initially inspired by, there's a video I put on YouTube a couple years ago where I found all this fan art that people had created of Journey, and I combined it with some of the original actual Matt Nava concept art, and I was able to reconstruct literally all of Journey using just still images that people had made, and then I made that, you know, flow accordingly alongside the album, and then I put like a text commentary overlay that you can turn on or off in the annotations on YouTube. And I always thought it was kind of a cool way to share the music on YouTube so people, you know, could hear it if they wanted to hear it on YouTube. But then it also is its own creative outlet. It's not just like here's the album cover as the quote video and then the music just plays as the way most music is. I thought, you know, well, why not just use this platform as its own thing? And so I thought, you know, what if I just commission a bunch of original art? And originally I just asked her, you know, could you make me digital paintings and just send me the files? And she said, well, what if they're real paintings and we just photograph them and or you know it's like scanning them essentially,
Yeah.
and then we can assemble them in this giant grid. And so she somehow managed to create, it's technically it's 23 paintings, and if you assemble them all in this grid, they actually also form one giant super image of all the characters together. And how she managed to work out the geography of that blows my mind, because the background, the landscape is continuous throughout this whole image, but yet it's depicting each individual track exactly as I described them. It's mind-boggling.
Wow.
And she's a genius. And so it was, yeah, the result is the weirdest. I have no idea how any of this happened, and I couldn't possibly write this score again even now because I just don't even know what's going on. It's just so bizarre. I mean, I listen back to the music and I say, I don't know how I wrote that. I don't know what I was thinking. It's just weird.
Well, like I said, it grabbed me from the second that I heard it. And I think what it is that you've got all these memes that, you know, we think we know, like the Morricone spaghetti Western music and the crazy circus music, and yet you mix it up in a way that sounds kind of familiar, but then like really different. So you've taken us into like a completely different place. And I think for me anyway, that's what's so cool about it.
Well, you know, as usual, I'm just lucky that people are interested in the weird ideas that I occasionally have, and that there's an actual outlet for those. I mean, you know, this game, you know, to me, the fusion. I mean, as you saw at MAGFest, for example, the collision of art and specifically painting with Anhila and music has become something that just feels like this massive untapped well to me, that I get very excited to find new opportunities for, but the fact that that could so easily happen on a, you know, a soundtrack album to a online sort of arena brawler is, I don't know how that works. I don't know how it is possible that that all just seems to be okay. But I just am so grateful that folks at Ready at Dawn and whatever are like, yeah, go for it, man. Have fun. It's just, I it's mind boggling to me, because I just thought, you know, I'm going to have to really convince people that this is a good idea. And somehow it didn't require any convincing. So yeah, it's just great fun. I and you know, the hope with this game is, as with other games like this, you know, they have so many ideas for more you know, environments that the game can take place in, and tile sets and characters and all that kind of stuff. And so hopefully, you know, I'll just be continuously writing new music for it as DLC for, you know, hopefully years to come. I love the game, and so I hope other people do too, and it can support that ecosystem of continuous new material.
Yeah, no, it's a really fun game, and every time I play Formball, I get dropped into this bunch of like really intense 8-year-olds, and they're out for blood.
Yeah, that's always the case with online games, it seems, that you inevitably get surrounded by people that are vastly better and much younger. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I feel like you could be 12 years old, and it's like, these damn 7-year-olds. I mean, it's just the eternal cycle of game life, I think. It's the Darwinistic environment of, you know, the young eating the old. But this game, they do a really good job, I think, at making it not punishing if you are still learning it.
Yeah.
Which is, that's always a big problem with a lot of online games. If you're not great the first few times you play, you get matched with people that are experts, and it's just not fun to learn. It's not fun to play with people that outmatch you so much. And it'd be like if the first time you ever played StarCraft was in like a South Korean tournament where you just like, you didn't stand the slightest chance. And this game, I think they do a really good job at making it so that even as you're learning, and if you're getting the crap kicked out of you, it's not unfun. It's actually really enjoyable still. And it's not punishing and all that. So yeah, I think it's just going to grow in its audience. I certainly hope that's the case, and people will discover it and not go too insane from the totally batshit weird music that I don't know how I wrote. And probably mental health professionals should not be listening to, or else I'll get dragged away in the night, I suspect. It is weird. Seriously, it is. I'm not even joking. Like, I'll listen to bits of it that I wrote like a year ago, and I'll think, I have no idea what I was thinking. I don't even know if this is good. This is just bizarre. And I'm amazed that Andrea loves it, and, you know, greenlit it and thumbs up the whole way through, because it just is so weird. And ultimately, though, I can just only feel lucky, just grateful that weirdness went unchecked.
Well, I am too, because it's not like anything else, and yeah, it's been great, and it's been so much fun to talk with you about it. I really appreciate your time.
Well, I appreciate it very much. And I appreciate your interest and enthusiasm, so thank you very much.